Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine. The crisis in Ukraine is defined by the battlefield. Fog of war makes it extremely impossible to determine what or how the battlefield is shaping up for one side or the other. However, because after 4 weeks we have many commentators pointing to surprises, we didn't know they could do that, or we're disappointed in the performance of, we turn to what we have learned so far, and my colleague, Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, and the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, happens to be a veteran armor commander in the Gulf. And so what we're looking at here is the disappointment in Moscow of the performance of the main battle tanks that the Russians have developed over these last decades since the end of the Soviet Union. And the disappointment is highlighted by two headlines coming from Europe in these last hours. One, a remark by the foreign minister. Russia's Lavrov claims substantial progress in Ukraine peace talks. If any of you are familiar with the history of the Second War, the Russians never talked about peace when they were winning, ever. They just kept driving. The second headline is more blunt. This is the Telegraph, London. Russia's plan to slowly strangle defenders in the east is easier said than done. Adding to this, Putin feels misled by Russian military, has lost trust in top brass. This is London reporting. Jeff, a very good evening to you. Let's go to the siege of Kyiv, especially from the northwest. What have we learned so far about the Russian failure to take Kyiv, the disappointment that Vladimir Putin is feeling, and the tactics that the Ukrainians have used on the battlefield? Good evening to you, Jeff.
Good evening to you, John. Well, clearly the Russians have failed in their efforts to take Kyiv, and I still maintain, despite their disclaimers, that that was an objective, because ultimately the military goal has to fit with the political objective. Political objective was to take down the Zelensky government. You do that by capturing the capital and bringing in a government more amenable to you. Why they failed to do that, I think, is because they, first of all, failed in their assumptions. Their assumptions were that the Ukrainians would not put up a stout defense. They would defend basically as they did in 2014, when a handful of little green men, quote unquote, were able to take Crimea in very quick order. And that assumption then drove them to the kind of tactics they employed, which were rapid armor advances, very close together, figuring they would blow right through the territory, rapidly roll things up, and be in Kyiv in a couple of days. The defense actually was there, strong defense, use of anti-tank weapons, and as a consequence, the tactics they employed for a rapid advance, the battle of annihilation they thought they were going to have, was catastrophic, and they found themselves being wiped out by the fact that their tanks were all bunched up, they didn't deploy infantry, their command and control was poor, and furthermore, they didn't have the logistical tail that could sustain now a sustained offense against a stiff resistance. So now what are they doing? Well, they're making virtue out of necessity in terms of saying we've been successful in attriting the force. That was our objective all along. I think that's untrue. And now we're going to concentrate on liberating the Donbass. And if you will, reducing the number of avenues of advance, which initially were like five avenues of advance from the north, northwest, west, south, coming up from Crimea down to a couple, that being into the Donbass from the east and coming north out of Crimea.
Jeff, a comment from an armor cap, a battle captain of armor veteran, as such as yourself. I saw a short video the other day of an American with Ukrainian forces exultant after what he reported was 6 hours of fighting. This was on the Telegraph side out of London. And he showed in this video that he was making with his mobile phone, four Russian battle tanks, all burning in some fashion, smoking, and their turrets were collapsed inside. and they were just shoved off the side of a country road. Now, it struck me that I didn't see any Ukrainian battle tanks. I just saw Ukrainian infantry carrying large weapons on their shoulders. I believe those were the javelins or the British equivalent. Is that something that we taught in the 20th century, that infantry with anti-tank weapons could defeat four main battle tanks?
Exactly, John. If you go back to the Yom Kippur War in 1973, and this was a great learning lesson for the U.S. military. I can remember being a young officer and being inundated by films from that war. And what happened in that war? Israeli armor advanced as the Egyptians were crossing the canal, only to run into Sagar anti-tank missiles in large numbers from Egyptians. And initially, Israel does what? Takes significant tank casualties. So the advent of the anti-tank weapon, and now, of course, in the 21st century, that anti-tank weapon, that successor of the Sagar and all those old wire-guided ATs, is a fire-and-forget weapon like the Javelin, which also has the penetrating power to make its way through heavy armor. And those in large numbers, particularly when, again, the Russians are concentrating on staying on the roads, part of that perhaps driven by their desire to move quickly, part of that driven by the weather, bunching up makes it just almost too easy for the anti-tank gunners to take them out. And, of course, if there had been Ukrainian tanks in the area, which you're talking about, any engagement they made successfully, they would probably move on and might not have been sitting around to look at the rubble anyway.
Another puzzle. I read in James Holland's book about tank warfare in the Second War. This is from Normandy to Germany, by one particular regiment, a British regiment with Sherman tanks, that they learned there was a pattern. Right away, they would attack, and then the Germans would almost robotically counterattack. So what they did was they would send out a probe, knowing the Germans were going to counterattack, and hold their main fire and their main attack until it blunted the counterattack. Learning from Normandy, they didn't know that when they landed on the beaches. That was their success all the way across France and Belgium into Germany. And the Germans never changed. The counterattack was coming. We knew it. And because we had big fire, a big artillery fire, both from the fleet off Normandy and from the Eighth Army, they could pulverize the German armor counterattack. Have the Russians learned in these weeks of defeat how to deal with those handheld weapons that the Ukrainians have?
They appear to start, John, but you put your finger on the problem. You know, I once visited the Galapagos Islands, and a gentleman was telling me about Charles Darwin. He said, you know, Darwin is quoted as saying that the strongest species survives. And he said, that's untrue. He didn't say that. What Darwin said is the species that adapts survives. The species that can adapt and adapt quickly survives. And the battlefield is an incredibly harsh teacher. You either learn or you die. And I have talked to Ukrainians about this, and they said they were amazed for the first 3 weeks of this war as the Russians are taking enormous casualties. And don't forget, John, even NATO says at this point the Russians may have suffered over 10,000 killed in action. They came on in the same fashion, bunched up, no infantry, no air cover, no reconnaissance, right into these killing zones created by these anti-tank gunners. Now, the last week or so, according to my Ukrainian sources, as the Russians are repositioning, they are starting to show what I would call basic solid combat tactics, spreading out their convoys, sending out a reconnaissance, using what we call reconnaissance by fire if we think there's an enemy position ahead, using landmines, frankly, in some places to block likely avenues advanced from their flanks, all those things. So they are learning. But the Russian military and Russian culture, which is very centralized in its command and control, one of their great weaknesses is the commander and the soldier and the unwillingness to create a climate that encourages initiative that can then translate into rapid adaptation, which on the modern 21st century battlefield, I would argue, is essential to survival and success.
The Battle of Kyiv right now seems to be on pause or just back to throwing large rockets and missiles against residential buildings. But we're told in the reporting, fog of war, that the Russians are going to reposition to concentrate on Donbass. Is there reason to believe they'll be more successful in Donbass than they were approaching Kyiv or other large cities on the west side of the Dnieper?
remains to be seen because of the ability of the Ukrainians also to reposition their forces. And it's a little unclear to me how much attrition Ukrainian forces in the Donbas certainly have suffered. But around Kyiv, I think they're going to keep a large force to continue to pound the city as well as Kharkiv, not unlike they did in Sarajevo. If they could take Mariupol, and this becomes very key because Mariupol as a port that can bring in resupply and also as a major road network point, then perhaps they could shift their focus coming in from the east, from the areas that the separatists had occupied in Donetsk and Luhansk, coming eastward, but also advance north and eastward from Kherson towards Dnipro and places like Izum. And in so doing, perhaps envelop that Ukrainian force in the Donbas, creating a salient, if you will, not unlike we did with the Germans during the advance through Normandy. And if they were to do so, this could put Ukrainian forces in a real difficult position. So the question will be, can they mount the forces that can do that? Can they cede Mariupol to get the sustainment to do that? And how the Ukrainians reposition their forces to meet that potential threat?
One more video, Jeff. It's how I managed to understand a little bit of what's going on in a battlefield where they're competing statements of victory. I saw a video of outside of a window. It was said to be Mariupol, but I'm not certain. Outside a window down on a street where a Russian main battle tank was advancing, had passed the window. And suddenly there was a bang and a flame. And what we were told was a anti-tank weapon, the British version of the Javelin, struck the tank, but was not effective according to the caption because it was too close a range. It needed to stand off a little more in order to initiate its ability to penetrate armor. However, that wasn't what impressed me. It was that I thought I was watching 1944 as the Germans counterattacked in St. Lo, or as, well, you know, that was the breakout out of Normandy for the American forces. It was as if nothing has changed. What is a tank doing inside of a city? It couldn't be more vulnerable than what I saw. It doesn't see what it's firing at it from the high ground. Have the Russians some magic that they can take tanks into city and win?
No, not at all, John. That's exactly the point, because if you look at other historical metaphors, Budapest, 1956, what did you see? You saw Russian tanks in the street, but they were always accompanied by infantry because of the visibility that a tanker has, or limited visibility, I should say, once he is buttoned up inside the tank. So I saw the same film, and seeing the lone one or two tanks by themselves is just crazy in a town, because they're channelized by narrow streets. In Chechnya, the Russians suffered enormous casualties. And over that 10 years of war, had 11,000 killed. A lot of that were anti-tank weapons being fired down on them from upper-story buildings. So again, them maneuvering a couple of tanks or even of several tanks without accompanying infantry to provide that kind of security is just, you know, tactics whereby they're not learning from the deaths they're suffering on the battlefield.
So advancing into the Donbass cities, even Mariupol, which we're told has been reduced, but really we're talking about them knocking down residential buildings. We're not talking about them dealing with the apartment buildings that give a high ground. They might be vacant, but they give a high ground. One more detail, Jeff. It's a puzzle here. What I saw when that tank was hit, it wasn't blown up, but it was bang against the turret. The information from James Holland's book, this is about the Sherwood Rangers Yeomanry, which is the British equivalent of National Guard. And they had Sherman tanks, and they advanced all the way across Northern Europe. They had the 75 millimeter on the Sherman, which could not penetrate Panzer armor, either the Panzer IV or the Tiger, much heavier tanks. But what they learned was they had a rapid rate of fire and a very good optical sight. So they would ping the Panzer, bang, 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 and the crew would bail out. Did you see a similar phenomenon, Jeff? And is that something we can assume the Russians are also wary of? When it gets banged that way, you're not blown up, but you're warned that you're zeroed in.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also a function of poor training and poor morale. There's been very many indicators of Russian poor morale. So when we make an encounter like that, the troops don't have confidence in their leadership. They're liable to give up. Secondly, when you're inside a tank like that and you're hit by a round, even if it doesn't penetrate, the concussion effect inside the tank is probably going to leave you with blood coming out of your ears and out of your nose and maybe out of the corner of your eyes. You're going to be less combat effective. And many times in towns in past where we've seen armor trying to operate, we saw the anti-tank gunners either A, moving around quickly as they can to get a rear shot on a tank, or again, a top shot on a tank because the armor is thinnest in those places, or you can disable the engine perhaps in the back, or just hitting the road wheels to make the tank immobile. And once it's immobile, then it becomes enormously vulnerable to the anti-tank gunners and those people who are operating on the streets. Again, I'll come back to the point, particularly if those tanks are not accompanied by their own infantry.
Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired. He is the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. He's a veteran of the U.S. Army Armor. He also is at Dickinson College and, importantly, CBS News. When we come back, Jeff is also a veteran of NATO. And how is NATO performing off the battlefield? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.